Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for joining me this hour for more of our special Veterans Day show. Before we begin the next segment, I just want to let our listeners know that this conversation will deal with sexual assault. If this is not the best time for you to hear this conversation, you can listen on demand on our website or on your podcast platform of choice. And if anytime you need support, please call the National Sexual Assault Hotline. That number is 1-800-656-4673. Unfortunately, it is difficult to discuss military issues without touching on the problem of sexual assault within the ranks of our service members. According to a 2018 analysis of 69 studies published in the journal Trauma, Violence, and Abuse, nearly one in four servicewomen have reported being sexually assaulted while in the military. Writer and Iraq War veteran Ryan Lee Dosti counts herself as one of those women. Ryan enlisted in the Army after graduating high school, hoping to train to become a military linguist. But her potential career is thrown off track when she is raped by a fellow soldier, and her commanding officers don't seem to believe her. In it, she chronicles her enlistment, her assault, and how she believes the military command mishandled her case. Ryan also gets candid about her struggles with PTSD, both as a result of the attack and as a lingering effect of her deployment to Iraq following 9/11. Kirkus calls the memoir, quote, an unquestionably inspiring story traversing the personal and public battlefields of sexual assault in the armed forces. I spoke with Ryan Lee Dosti back in 2019 when the memoir was first published. I began my conversation by asking Ryan why she decided to tell her story in the present tense.
For me personally, some of it felt like you're still going through it. You're still in it. And it felt more urgent and like it wasn't really over. So running in the past tense in some instances felt dishonest, mm-hmm. like it was already said and done, whereas it's not.
How long did it take you to write this?
This is complicated. there's a long answer to
that's
that.
That's okay.
I had started it as a undergrad creative thesis. It was just, you know, a couple of pages, or it was like 80 pages. It wasn't really anything. And then I had put it off for a while, and then when I went to get my Master's of Fine Arts in Writing, I expounded on it to be a thesis. That was 3 years, mm-hmm. But I wasn't, you know, really dedicated to writing it all the time. After I got my thesis, I had about a year that I just dedicated to making it a book, and I also had a newborn then, so. So I would say 4 years, but, you know, knock on wood, no. My next book would not take that long.
Was there ever any point in going through this you thought, you know what, I'm not sure I can finish this?
I don't know if there was a point where I thought I couldn't finish it, but there was lots of points where I thought it wasn't worth anything. Like, I was like, this is not good. Nobody's going to care. Why am I writing this? And I kept writing, but I wasn't sure it was ever going to go anywhere.
Why would you think someone wouldn't care?
I guess I spent so long thinking I didn't have anything worth saying that putting it on paper, I had to overcome that fear and that anxiety. And I wasn't entirely sure, you know, that people would care. You know, it's just one person's story. So trying to capture people's attention on that is difficult.
Ryan, when did you and why did you enlist in the Army?
I enlisted in part for college money. I mean, that's, you know, just the logistics of it. But really, I just, I was looking for an adventure. I was looking for something different to do that most other people didn't do. I wanted to travel. I really thought I was going to get to study Japanese at the Defense Language Institute of Monterey. I already spoke Japanese, so I thought I was going to get more language training. And it just sounded exciting and wild and different. And this was pre-9/11, so there was no fear of war. as my recruiter promised, who's going to go to war with America as I signed up. So,
and how old were you?
I was 18 when I enlisted, but 19 when I shipped off for basic training.
So your plan was to be a linguist. That was your whole goal.
Yeah.
You start the book, you get right to it, about the assault and the rape when you were about 21 years old. Why did you decide to just start right there?
This is always, I think, the worst answer, but I felt that the first sentence was compelling or catched the reader's attention. Mm-hmm. Originally, I did not intend to have it right up front. It was a little bit more towards the back, and I was talking about the aftermath and dealing with, you know, the military and their disbelief and their secondary victimization and all that. And in the MFA program, my professor, Tim Parrish, who's a fantastic writer, he said, well, why are you putting it all the way back here? Like, why are you hiding it? So we put it right up there in front, and it felt right and it felt good. And it wasn't being hidden then. I was like, this is what happened, and this is how we're gonna move on from there.
Looking back, do you think you were trying to hide it, that there was something sort of about the experience or about how you were feeling about it that you wanted to push it down a little bit in the book?
I think so. I think I also didn't want to write it. So I had written around it for a long time. It was a really the second chapter was difficult to write. It was one of the most difficult chapters. Mm-hmm. Oddly not the most. But it was one of the most difficult, and I avoided it for a long time. So maybe that was why.
Which was the most difficult?
The hardest was, and this, y'all, I don't know if you could tell in the audiobook, I had gotten, I started crying. That was in Iraq when my commander then blamed me for everything. And it's still such an intense moment because he was saying all my worst fears, that it was my fault, that I had only myself to blame. And he put that all on me. And I think even though you do therapy and you rationally know that none of that is true, there's that feeling is just always deep in the back of your head. And when you're bringing it back out, it was soul crushing, to be honest.
My guest is Ryan Lee Dosti. The name of her book is Formation, A Woman's Memoir of Stepping Out of Line. When did you realize, after you reported the rape, that this was going to be very, very difficult for you?
It was about a week after I reported it, because I reported it that night, and then there was a wait until they called me back in. And once I was in that room with the investigator, it felt very much like an interrogation. And every time I said I was raped, he would just turn it around and say, he was working really hard for me to say I wasn't raped. And he was just hitting me with everything he got. And I was 19 and I was young, and he was older. He's an authority figure. I'm supposed to be able to trust him. And
in the book you write, he keeps saying, are you sure?
Yeah, he kept saying, are you sure?
Are you sure? The amount of times he said, are you sure, to you was infuriating as a reader.
Yes. And the fact that he kept saying I had to have said no, even though I said no in a multitude of other ways, he was kept stressing, you have to have said the word no, which isn't true. I didn't know how to fight back against that. And after that interview, that was when I realized this is rough. And that's when I started noticing the little things about how they were doing the investigation, about, you know, the questions they were asking. Was she promiscuous? Oh, she wasn't promiscuous. Well, then is she just trying to save her reputation? Like, these little things that they were just kind of making up. Or that's when I knew this was not going to go well.
At any point during this investigation, this initial one, did you start to question your own account?
No. In what way?
And you thought, like, oh my gosh, did I, you know?
I don't think so, because I think what I kept running in my own head was, I had gone out to drink with my friends. I had too much. I went home to my room. That was supposed to be my safe space. I did everything that I could right. The only thing I did wrong, and I say with air quotes,
yes,
is drink that night. And that's not even something that's wrong. And he had also said to his friends, and that was in the report, that he was going to that Dosti chick's room because she's really drunk. And so that's when I said, he knew that I was too drunk or that I was very drunk and that he was preying on that moment. So those were the things that probably sustained me when I might have questioned myself.
Ryan, would you mind reading a short passage from your book so that people get a sense of your writing and a sense of what that experience was from page 13?
Sure. Maybe it would have been okay if I would have gotten over it and moved on. But that's not the way it happened. And which is worse, to be raped, one singular act done and then over with, or to be raped and turned to your command, to your lines of authority, your father figures, your abstract constructs of justice and integrity, to innocently curl up against them, whispering, save me, believe me, and have them stare back at you, stone-faced, to have them hold you at arm's length and announce in a joint, resounding voice, no.
So Ryan, you learned that the investigation, it comes back to you that the word unsubstantiated. What did you think when you first heard them describe what happened as being unsubstantiated?
Well, when they first said that, I didn't know what it meant. I'd never heard the word before. And I remember saying to my sergeant, well, what does that mean? You know, I don't understand. And essentially it means, you know, they only have his word against yours. And I remember saying, well, what about the pictures? There was bruises on me. There were scratches on him. There was, he had said to his friends, she was really drunk. That's why I'm going there. And there was other things, like for example, I didn't put this in the book, but when the police initially spoke to him, he said he was never there. And they said, well, we know you were there. And then he's like, okay, well, I was there. And I'm like, well, he had lied. I mean, I don't understand why you're believing him if there's all this evidence. And that was what went through my head and everything that I said to him. And they were just like, well, I don't know. He said, I don't know what to say or what to do about it. And it was a very, I just felt helpless. Like, I don't understand. I have all this evidence. Why is no one listening to me?
How long did you have to be around your rapist?
Definitely for several weeks. And then they moved him to another unit. I thought they had moved him off the base. Like, I didn't know he was still on the base until I ran into him at a different motor pool, which is where his unit was. But there was a couple of weeks that, yeah, and I asked if I could be moved. I wanted out. I wanted out of that place. And they refused to move me, but they moved him. And yeah, so to answer the question, a couple of weeks, we were still in the same unit and I would have to be in formation and see him there and see him in the company building and near the barracks and all that stuff.
Do you know where he is now?
I don't. My father, I believe, does. And he has said, and my father knew it. We had this conversation and my father said his full name and where he lived. And I was like, I didn't even know you knew that. I haven't said the guy's name in over a decade, the real name. But I think he's far enough away that I feel like I'm not going to bump into him. But for a long time, that was my fear, that I would walk into somewhere that was my place. Right. And he would get close with everybody. And then they'd be like, oh, it's just him. He's not a bad guy. Like, oh, you must be mistaken. So I kept having this anxiety that he was going to infiltrate my world, you know.
At the end of the book, there's sort of this moment when your dad suggests, kind of like he had him rubbed out.
Yeah.
It was such a dad moment. Yeah. It was such a moment of like, I'm going to protect my daughter. At least I'm going to give her, even if it isn't true, I'm going to let her think that could be the case.
Yeah.
Your parents, how would you describe your parents' reaction to what happened to you and how they treated you and how they supported you?
My mom obviously was supportive right away. I mean, she wanted to rain down hellfire. Like, she wanted to take care of it and get everything. And I probably should have let her. She wanted to make everything right as best as she could. And I didn't want to talk with her about that. And I know that's weird because we have a close relationship, but it's just a difficult thing to talk with your mother about, you know, to be that to show that you've been hurt and that you're that vulnerable and anything like that. So I feel like my mom sort of got the short end of the stick in that, you know, she couldn't, I didn't let her be the mom that she wanted to be in that moment. And my father was furious. He threatened to come and beat the guy up with a bat. And that was the one conversation that we had for a very long time. By then, we never talked about it again for, until at the end of the book, the conversation that we have. That, so it's been, it was almost like a decade that, wow, we never mentioned it again. And there might have been roundabout ways I might have said the thing that happened at, mm-hmm, Fort Polk or whatever, but so yeah, that was, they both were supportive in their own ways. Neither of them questioned me or anything like that.
Ryan, was the military supportive of you in any way during this process? You basically snorted. That's our, that's kind of the answer. In any way, were they supportive of you?
Not at Fort Polk. I feel like maybe if it was at a different base, it might have been a different response. There was one woman who was supportive that I remember that night. And she must have gotten up in the middle of the night. I don't know if she was a civilian. I don't know who she was. But she came to the, while they were doing the rape kit, and she was kind. And she said, these are the people you have to call. Don't let your command tell you no. And I just, I remember her. And I never found her again. And I don't know why. But it's a bait. I don't know if she was a civilian or what happened. Probably not. She was probably some kind of military, but she just wasn't in uniform. And that was the kindest moment I had while I was from the military.
Have you heard from anybody from the military since the book has been published?
I've heard from some people that I deployed with who've read it. They've all been very supportive, mm-hmm, which is really good. And they also have said, oh, you know, I remember, you know, you described Iraq well, or I can tell who this person is. But most of them said, I didn't know you went through that, and I'm sorry.
That was the first part of my conversation with Ryan Lee Dosti about her book Formation, A Woman's Memoir of Stepping Out of Line. We'll have more with Ryan after a quick break. You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. We continue my conversation with author and Iraq War veteran Ryan Lee Dosti. I spoke to her about her book, Formation, A Woman's Memoir of Stepping Out of Line. In it, Ryan recounts her experience of being sexually assaulted while in the military. If at any time during the segment you feel triggered or you feel you need support, please call the National Sexual Assault Hotline. That number is 1-800-656-4673. When Ryan enlisted in the Army, her recruiter told her it was very unlikely she would face combat. But following 9/11, Ryan was deployed to Iraq, already carrying with her the trauma of being raped by a fellow soldier. I asked Ryan what she was feeling when she first arrived in Iraq, already struggling with PTSD.
Confusion, I think, was the biggest thing, because no one told us how long we were going to be there. We couldn't figure out what our job was going to be because we didn't speak Arabic. It was just all a jumble. We were the first occupying force. The Marines had come in, but we were the first force that was going to be staying there. So there was nothing set up. There was no expectations. There was no one that could tell us what was going to happen because they had been there before us. So, and we were living in these like blown up rubble buildings. Mm-hmm. So it was really just a lot of confusion trying to figure out how to, you know, put everything together and figure out what we were doing, job-wise, everything.
At one point while you're in Iraq, you're accosted by an Iraqi man.
A teenager. Probably. Yeah.
If you would describe that experience for us, and did your body react to it with some of the trauma from what happened to you in the States? Or your reaction was interesting in the book. Do you think it was as a result of what happened in the United States?
I think it was probably as a result. I was angry. And so I went to butt stroke him with my rifle. And, you know, I threw him off and he went to butt stroke him with the rifle. And I was just so angry. Mm-hmm. And I think if what had happened in Fort Polk had not happened, that might not have been as, I wouldn't have had as severe of a reaction. But I think it was an accumulated response. It was a finally having a chance to react to a man touching me in a way that he's not supposed to, and I finally get to respond, well, I guess violently, which probably isn't a healthy response, but that was what I was feeling at the time. And I remember I went to butt stroke him, and I hit his shoulder. And I remember being so angry. I was like, you know, like I really wanted to instill in him that you cannot touch me like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually a little scary, probably, when I thought about it afterwards. I was like, that's probably not a normal reaction.
And then the Army's reaction was really bizarro. describe what happened when you describe it to somebody and they're like, hey, well, you didn't report this.
Yeah. And she couldn't understand why I didn't report it. She was like, because to her, this is upsetting. You know, mm-hmm. this guy grabbed you and tried to kiss you in a hallway, and they're not supposed to do that. You need to report it. To me, I'm like, this is nothing. And I handled it. You know, I've been through much worse, and I definitely am not going to report it again, because I don't need them looking at me and being like, oh, there's Dosti complaining again about, you know, well, sexual assault. And they took it so ridiculously seriously, which I guess in another scenario is good. You know, you don't want to let people get away with sexual assault. But compared to how they reacted to the rape, it just felt like almost an insult. Like a slap in the face, like, and they wanted to feel so good about themselves. Oh, we're taking care of you. We're keeping you safe, but only when the other person isn't an American. So they had this formation. I had to pick them out of this formation of people, and I wasn't even entirely sure, because it was a very quick moment. It was kind of dark, and I kept saying, "I'm like, what if I'm picking the wrong person?" And I'm like, "Oh, it doesn't matter. It's just an example." And it was just so infuriating, like, oh, the facts don't matter right now.
My guest is Ryan Lee Dosti. The name of her book is Formation, A Woman's Memoir, Stepping Out of Line. The next part of your book really deals with PTSD and what happened to you. Do you see the PTSD that you experienced, was it from being in Iraq? Was it from the sexual assault? Was it a weird conflation of the two? What do you think now that you've had some time to think about it and to write about it?
I think there is some conflation of the two, but I think the majority of my PTSD is from the rape and the secondary victimization. I think that left a really bad mark on me. Obviously, rape is horrible. You're rendered vulnerable, mm-hmm. and it's obviously a horrible experience, but then when you go to people who are supposed to trust and protect you, and then they do nothing, or they blame you, that was extremely horrible as well, because they were that's your command. These are the mm-hmm. people who are supposed to be there for you. And I think that made me question myself for a long time, for years afterwards. And it shows that I have a sort of a weird grade of PTSD, at least in my mind. I'm like, it's not the stereotypical movie type of PTSD. And I think a lot of that has to do with it being from the rape and then being blamed for it as well. Mm-hmm. So I think I have combat triggers, but like, so last night I was here in the city, and they were doing, they did some fireworks. And
it sounded,
and you can't see the fireworks, but you can hear them bouncing off the buildings, and it sounded like mortars. And me and my best friend was here, and she's also military, and we kept looking around. We're like, you know, is this fireworks? Or are we at war? You know, mm-hmm. and it was, so those things, I might get a trigger from that, but that can trigger then feelings of anxiety about the sexual assault. So it's all weirdly wired.
What have you done in terms of therapy that's really been helpful?
I did cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT.
Hard to say.
Yes. I did 14 weeks of that. That was probably the first thing I did. And that allowed me to say the word rape. So mm-hmm. for when it initially, I couldn't even say the word. So that was extremely helpful. And then I worked continuously with a psychiatrist at the VA hospital in Connecticut, who I see very often. And there's been times we've had to do medication as well. So they're all helpful, and it's in their own way. it's just like therapy is a continually evolving beast, I guess.
Yeah, of course. What do you hope someone takes away from your book? I know that's sort of a basic question, but I think it's an important one with this conversation.
I hope, well, I'll say that since it's been out or people have been reading it, whether it's early copies or just recently, I've had several women tell me something similar happened to me. And we're not even just talking about military, but they're sharing their sexual assault stories as well. So I hope it helps people talk about, whether it be their own experiences or somebody they know, or feel like that they don't have to be hiding these secrets. It doesn't have to be whispered about. And I also hope it brings attention to PTSD and all the different ways that it can come about. And I really hope that it'll help maybe bring some kind of change with the military. You know, a sort of a what not to do manual. I have a lot of hopes for it, I guess. But, you know, we'll see.
That was my conversation with Iraq War veteran Ryan Lee Dosti about her book, Formation, A Woman's Memoir of Stepping Out of Line. Up next, we highlight another memoir from a veteran, writer and National Book Award finalist Elliot Ackerman, who served in both Iraq and Afghanistan, speaks about his memoir, Places and Names, on War, Revolution, and Returning. That's after a quick break. This is All of It.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.